This production is brought to you by Magentrix. Magentrix is a pioneer in platforms for partner ecosystem management and partner relationship management. This is Partner Relationship Management, the ultimate channel sales podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Ultimate Channel Sales Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Bird. Well, it's that time of year again. We brought back Rob Spee and Vince Menzione, the other two partnership podcast hosts, for our annual Partnership Trends and Predictions episode. We'll be reviewing key insights and trends we've all noticed over the past year surrounding topics such as partner programs, changes in vendor approaches, partner technology trends, and our predictions for 2024. As usual, feel free to follow along with the transcript or easily replay a section with our chapter markers. As a refresher, Rob Spee, host of Channel Journeys podcast, as well as the Senior Vice President of Global Channel and Alliances at Beyond Trust, and Vince Menzione, the host of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering, as well as the founder of Ultimate Partnerships. Welcome to the show, Rob. Welcome back, Vince. It's great to have you guys here.
Great to see you guys.
Great to see you. This is so much fun.
I always love getting together.
Yeah, this is it. I love it.
So let's look at, maybe we'll start with the topic of changing behaviors in the market this year. Co-selling has been a bigger focus area. Do you guys agree with that? Are you noticing anything around co-selling in this space?
Definitely. I know you are too, Vince. And Vince, you have a different angle on co-selling, a very specific angle on co-selling that you've been talking a lot about and doing shows on. I'm seeing a huge push on co-selling from a lot of different perspectives, but a much broader co-sell that traditionally for us was more of a co-selling with the reseller. Mm-hmm. And we're getting into co-selling with different types of partners, our systems integrators, our service delivery partners, and really leveraging the ecosystem, including, Vince, the hyperscalers that you've been working with.
Co-sell, I recall 4 or 5 years ago, companies saying, well, why would I want to co-sell with the hyperscalers? Like, they don't really sell my product. But now they're tapping into this opportunity, right? We start looking at the three hyperscalers. They're all going after these large cloud contracts, right? So these large durable cloud budgets, there's $300 billion of them now. So a new kind of a greenfield, if you will, for all the ISVs, all of the SIs of the world to go work with those organizations more effectively.
Did you, either of you, have a chance to read the Canalys Co-sell Tech Matrix report that came out? I guess it was maybe last week and a half ago.
I did not. No, I'm going to check that out, Paul.
I saw it, but I did not read it, Paul. Yep.
There was kind of a lot of focus more on the traditional account mapping, the crossbeams, the partner taps, the reveals, as well as a little bit on the tech side. But I'm wondering, when you look at kind of co-sell, how critical is that that kind of joint account mapping, account planning, to having an effective co-sell action?
I think it's critical. This is something that we're pushing really, really heavily next year at Beyond Trust with our sellers. We're setting a goal, maybe lofty, of having 100% partner ecosystem participation in our deals, meaning that our reps are really getting to understand who the partners are in the account. They can triangulate through their relationships and information that they have in the account and really leverage the full power of the ecosystem. And much of that ecosystem is going to already be in the account. There are other partners that they can introduce into the account for added value. So yeah, that's something that we're really pushing heavily on.
And Vince, are you seeing a big impact in the kind of hyperscalers when it comes to co-sell?
Yes. And you know, you brought out a good point, right? They were underrepresented in the Magic Quadrant. Tackle was in there, I believe, as the one. And Tackle has a co-sell operating model that includes software. Some other organizations that do consulting work in this area use spreadsheets still. And really what they're doing is mechanically taking Salesforce data and moving it up to the operating model, Partner Center for Microsoft, ACE for AWS, and Google's still using spreadsheets, but they're manually moving the data back and forth to do that. Again, Tackle has a more effective model here than some. But the platforms, the hyperscalers, support a lot of that also. They were left out of that report, probably on purpose. I haven't had a chance to talk to Canalys about that, but it is an important factor. It certainly is an important factor.
And this is more for you, Vince, but I had a conversation with Jay McBain last year, or earlier this year, and he made a prediction that he would note that there was going to be a shift. Vendors who are kind of forgoing the traditional resellers in favor of selling in marketplaces. Is this something that you're seeing in 2023 as well?
It's not an either or. I look at it from a couple of different perspectives. I think that the marketplace strategy, working directly with the hyperscalers, is a channel to market. If you are selling into large enterprise accounts, you might forego a reseller or another channel strategy, depending on your overarching strategy for that account, which may include security, may include other software and so on. But the resellers, the channel, is the most effective way for an ISV to get to the customer in the mid-market, for sure. Maybe lower enterprise, mid-market, and SMB market. So I think it's an and, not an or. And what you're starting to see with Microsoft and AWS was out of the gate earlier with this, is what Microsoft refers to as multi-party offers, which is where Microsoft, an ISV, and a channel partner are all coming together to stitch together the offering to the customer. They're using the marketplace as a delivery mechanism and tapping into the cloud budgets. The customer already has made the commitment of 10 million, 100 million, whatever that number is, but everybody benefits along the journey. It's a different monetization model for some. Some like it, some don't, but it allows the channel to participate in the way that they best support the customer.
We're seeing the same thing, Paul. It's not an either or. We're seeing both when we're executing. I think every deal, or just about every deal we've done in the marketplace, had another partner involved for resale, for delivery, whatever it would be, or a combination of the two. But I think the automation that you were just talking about, that's what's so super important, is really going to be a big player next year, is that automation from several perspectives. There's the account mapping automation, the cross beams, partner taps, getting that data into your Salesforce so the sellers can just very quickly see who's the ecosystem in the account. Mm-hmm. But then that automation for co-selling, like Vince was describing with Tackle.io, and there are a number of different solutions for doing that. That's also super critical, so that you're not doing it on spreadsheets.
That's right.
What about when vendors are using marketplaces to co-innovate and co-sell? Rob, has that become a bigger trend over the past year? And maybe for you, Vince, what impacts has kind of co-innovation applied when it comes to marketplaces?
I'm curious, Vince, what innovation have you seen from a marketplace perspective?
I think it's early days. I'm starting to see some, when you say co-innovation, I'm thinking about delivery of multiple services. So maybe that's a form of co-innovation. For instance, mm-hmm. I have a line of business application. I have a security application, and maybe I have the delivery of those two and wrapping around both the transaction and maybe some support services around that. And that's where I'm seeing the model today. I don't know if that's what you mean by co-innovation. I'm not seeing co-creation, if that's what you mean. I'm not seeing mm-hmm. the co-creation yet happen, where two ISVs are melding their technologies together and creating a third thing. Is that what you're referring to, Paul?
Well, I'm really looking for the idea of being able to have a vendor working with, again, multiple partners, but then to innovate with creative solutions and kind of bring that technology together, which I guess is to a degree co-creation. I had a chat with Tim Lowe from Red Hat, and he's been able to leverage his partner channel to essentially optimize the spend within the marketplace. And this is multiple partners working together to produce kind of a joint solution. And it was kind of the best example that I had seen of co-innovation, kind of leveraging each other's technology stacks to provide a better solution to the end user that's going to help optimize their spend.
Got it.
I think co-innovation is a goal of the ecosystem. But it's something that's a little bit later in the maturity curve, and we're starting to get into it. And that's co-innovation largely with our tech integration partners, including the hyperscalers, where we can integrate information security data from the hyperscalers, from their platforms. But we're really looking at a variety of different managed service providers, system integrators, other types of partners. Some of these have their own platforms that they've been building, cybersecurity platforms. And so we're looking at how do we integrate into that and drive co-innovation with them. So it's coming. And I think it's something that we should all be looking at next year.
Yeah. And it's hard, right? I mean, I think the co-innovation, two organizations that have separate biases on what they're creating, they have separate domain. It's hard going across a single organization, right? Stovepiped. Then bringing two organizations together at the development side is even more challenging at times than the true partnership transaction side.
So, Rob, question for you. How have partner programs changed in 2023? Are there any kind of standout insights that you've seen?
Well, I think there are a couple of trends that are taking place, right? People are starting to move their programs away from the old transactional metallic tiers into a much more broader points type system that takes into account the different types of value that partners can provide. That is definitely one trend. I also see a trend of something that we did at BeyondTrust last year, which was to consolidate and simplify into one global program that encapsulated all the different partner models in the ecosystem. So going from five different contracts down to just one partner agreement to cover all those. So I think simplification has been a big theme, but adjusting to recognize in the ecosystem, there are all these different business models and you've got to really flex that way. Also, I think a trend that's coming is, and we're talking about this internally at BeyondTrust, is if you look at partner discounts as the main motivator and incentive model, that doesn't really fit the ecosystem either. Yeah. And it's much more around enablement to drive customer success. Because as partners move their business models to services and a SaaS model, customer success is paramount for them too. So they want to be enabled on how, not only just how to sell your product effectively, but how to sell it as a value proposition, many times integrated with other solutions that they sell. And then how do they ultimately drive that customer success?
Vince, have you noticed any changes or trends on how vendors approach their programs?
I don't watch it as closely as Rob does. I mean, Rob is sort of the domain expert on channel programs. And I like to hear the fact that more are following this points methodology. Microsoft was kind of first to the market a couple of years ago, out of the world of silver and gold. I do see that the marketplace is driving, when I look at the hyperscalers, that's driving some changes to their programs and how they think of incenting. We just saw AWS just announce changes and they're lowering their fees on their marketplace, lowering the cost of doing business there. And of course, the others are following suit. So I do see that as an incentive to organizations to build on those platforms. And then also what we're also starting to see from some of the hyperscalers, the three, is more money being plowed back into the channel to enable partners to go deliver on behalf of, rather than reducing fees so much, but it's more about how do I create an environment where everybody wins.
Are there any new KPIs that you've noticed that vendors are focusing on? Vince, it's probably different with the hyperscalers than Rob, you as a channel chief with your ecosystem. Any new KPIs you've been seeing?
Definitely from our perspective, we this year started tracking things like partner success. We instituted a way that we could have our partners submit an NPS survey to the customer who would then score their services work. So we just launched that this year. I think 150 surveys have gone out already, and we're seeing really good results, really strong, high NPS scores for our partner delivery, which is exactly what we want to see. If we see a low score, it allows us to dig in and see, okay, maybe there's some more enablement that's needed here. So that's been a big one. You know, looking at the percentage of partner delivery, the success of that delivery. The other thing that we're tracking is ecosystem involvement. So looking at that ecosystem, what types of partners and how many partners are engaged in the opportunities? What we want to do next now is start doing some comparisons. So, okay, what is the growth of the business? And look at different KPIs with the ecosystem versus without. How can you really show the comparison? I am seeing a big push from the C-level to have better metrics on the ecosystem. You know, the old transactional metrics are great, but they don't tell the full story. And when you're trying to say, well, this is a different type of partner, they're not going to bring us deals, they're not going to do transactions, they're all about customer success, how do you prove the value of that? So what I want to be able to start measuring is, as a true SaaS company, the customer acquisition cost, is that going down with the ecosystem? And customer lifetime value, is that going up with the ecosystem? Mm-hmm. So both should be true. I've got to be able to track it to prove it. That's the challenge.
For sure. And what about you, Vince? Are you seeing anything as far as kind of KPIs in marketplaces and hyperscalers?
Yeah. So the big move this year, when Microsoft made its announcements on marketplace, was that in order to be considered a partner that was they were going to go co-sell with, you had to have a transactable offer in the marketplace. So, so in essence, they flipped the switch, right? I don't know if they call it. So it's a new KPI, transactable offers. So I think that's trying to drive the right behavior there specifically. And I think that's the big one there. The other area that where I see from a, whether it's KPI or investment strategy is in the mid-market. Recognition that mid-market is the area where we see the potential for the most growth for partners. And you're starting to see this too, right? It looks like all the GSIs overinvested this year. They're all clustered around the big enterprises, right? 11,000 North American accounts, some neighborhood like that. This mid-market opportunity is a rich opportunity. I've been calling it the acre of diamonds, in fact, because it's underpenetrated. And just with Microsoft alone, I know that only 40% of 40,000 accounts have partners attached to them. So that tells you there's a huge opportunity for growth.
Absolutely. Well, what about partnership technology this year? Any general trends that you guys have noticed when it comes to the partner tech stack? Are people doing anything new with their tech stacks? Vince, why don't we start it off with you? Because you get to deal with the tech in a whole different way that Rob does.
Well, going back to marketplaces again, right? So One thing I've noticed, you know, Tackle was early to the game. I think they came out in 2016. They were first to market. They were pretty much the lone player in that space for a period of time. So they had a market unto themselves. And I've seen at least six marketplace enablement software vendors come to market just this year alone. Mm-hmm. So it's starting to get a little bit more crowded. And then organizations like Workspan, which grew out of alliance management co-selling, have now put marketplace enablement into their portfolio.
Yeah,
so we're starting to see more of them are integrating that and trying to create that whole solution. I also think you'll see some consolidation there at some point, right? There's got to be.
Mm-hmm. And Rob, how about you? What does your tech stack look like this year?
I'm seeing two things that are helping us and I probably helping other vendors is one is integrations. And it's just like a BeyondTrust. When we sell our technology, customers really love it when we have out-of-the-box integrations with other technologies that are part of their broader solution to solve a cybersecurity issue. The same thing is from managing an ecosystem. When I can, it's very hard. You can't find one platform that does it all. So you've got all these point products, best of breed, but I'm starting to see more partnering within the tech stack community and more integrations. That is super helpful. I hope some of that will lead to consolidation. Let's see some acquisitions here and bring that into the fold. So integrations is super powerful and helpful. The other thing is AI and the generative AI and seeing vendors. I'm really pleased to see the vendors starting to incorporate that into the solution because none of us have time or trust going out to ChatGPT to do this. But When it's starting to be coming into the platforms that we use, that's the most valuable for us. And plus, then you as vendors have already done as tech providers have done the security work, hopefully, right, to make sure that it's a secure solution for us to use.
For sure. And kind of on the topic of Gen AI, would you say that was there a standout of technology for partnership leaders that were helping their programs? Do you think Gen AI was that quote unquote killer app this year?
I don't know if I'd call it the killer app yet, Paul. I think there was a lot of fear and a lot of hope for what Gen AI could do. And I think it's calming down a little bit. It is in my own mind, you know, I'm starting to trust it more, but also recognize what it can and can't do for me. So I think it could be the killer app of 24 for us. From my perspective, it hasn't gotten there yet.
How about you, Vince? Is there any kind of technology that's been really beneficial that has emerged this year? And is generative AI, is that emergence this year really going to drive hyperscalers and marketplaces?
Well, certainly if you were to talk to Satya Nadella at Microsoft, Gen AI is where it's at. I mean, that's where Microsoft is investing heavily. And they've been building Copilot into all of their products, right? So you're starting to see this permeate. The street likes it. The market likes it. Microsoft stock hit an all-time high this year, just about a couple of weeks ago. I think it hit like 380 at one point. It's in the 370s range right now. So the market likes it. And a really interesting conversation. We can pivot onto the Sam Altman conversation. Probably that'd be a very interesting dialogue on leadership principles. But certainly Microsoft, you know, made some big announcements at the Ignite conference, general availability of their Copilot products. And we'll start to see more of this permeate within the collaboration suites for sure. And also from, you know, developer I know on the developer side, you've done some things on the AI side, Paul, with your organization. But I think you'll see more of it just blended into what Microsoft offers to the developer community as well.
Absolutely. I know that at Magentrix, we've noticed a trend in the chatter on LinkedIn, which is about really the future of PRMs, the kind of partner relationship management portals. For the record, PRMs are not dead, as we've said elsewhere.
I'm glad to hear that.
PRMs and distribution, not dead yet.
Exactly. There's kind of a recurring claim. And while true, PRMs are not going to die anytime soon, they're really the foundation of a partner tech stack, from my perspective, just like a CRM is the basics for customer data management. I think the problem that I saw this year was that there's a lot of people that have misguided expectations for what a PRM can do. So they end up blaming their PRM, saying it doesn't work. And I think these are really kind of misguided expectations. It comes from not really having the education on what a PRM can do. But unlike you, Rob, I think there's a lot of people that don't understand the importance of actually engaging with their partner ecosystem and what that means when it comes to their relationship management platform. One of my favorite topics that I wanted to talk about for 2023, partner-driven revenue. And this one always makes me smile when I have these conversations. Any observations on changes or updates on kind of partner-driven revenue in 2023? Rob, we'll start off with you.
Yeah, you know, I actually fought to take that out of our comp plan this year.
Really?
For 24. I fought unsuccessfully. And maybe I was a bit too early to the game to do this. But I think when you look at the ecosystem, the broad value of the ecosystem is so vast that just being focused on partner origination is really doing everyone a disservice.
Yeah.
But at the same time, our companies are making massive investments in the ecosystem. And this is one of the easiest ways to measure value of the channel, right? Of that transactional channel. What I do think, though, too, is interesting, and there was a really interesting report on this. You know, you see the percentage of deal registrations mm-hmm. that are coming into your business, right? Some percentage of your business is partner originated. What you don't see, though, is the true partner origination taking place out in the market. All of that influence that is taking place that for us is probably triple what we're seeing in deal registrations.
Wow.
That is super hard to measure. So I've got to convince everyone, hey, don't use this as the sole measurement to justify investment, because all the investment that we're doing in partner success for service delivery, technical certifications, that drives successful projects, which then enables and empowers that partner to go to the next customer and talk about all the success they had. And now I've got a use case that they can talk about. And they may never bring us a deal registration, but they are massively influencing that customer. So I think that's the risk of focusing on partner originated. So we included in our comp plan next year, we're setting reasonable targets, because I'm saying, look, we're not going to double partner origination that we're going to measure for deal registration, but we should see growth in the business through all the work and enablement we're doing that drives that influence.
And Vince, from your perspective, what's the impact on partner-driven revenue from a hyperscaler perspective? Do you think it's more along the lines of a drawdown effort, or do you think there are greater ways of attributing partners to the actual dollars moving to the hyperscalers?
So Microsoft wouldn't break that out as a KPI, right? Mm. They would look at it as, we want partners to generate their own opportunities. Mm-hmm. We're not going to pay our sellers unless the seller is co-selling with the partner. So there is an inclination to register the deals and get a co-sell engagement model going and getting that lit up so that Microsoft at least knows about it. It's also used as a flywheel to say, I just sold $5 or $10 million mm-hmm. in new revenue for you, and get on the radar. Right. And then on the burn down side, Paul, to your point, Microsoft wants all of these partners that are riding on Microsoft's rails to have an agreement with them. So, yes, they're also customers of Microsoft. So if you have a Mac agreement, you know, and you're burning down $10 million a year, that benefits a salesperson as well. So there's double attribution there, even though it's not called out. Like Microsoft probably wants nothing more than letting these partners go off and burn down. But partners want more from Microsoft, right? So or Amazon or Google. And they want to use that to say, look what we've done for you, and we need your help here, right? And recognizing the fact that they have those relationships at the highest levels of the C-suite, because these agreements are being negotiated at that level.
Do you think there's still an issue with partner attribution? Do you think that's still a problem for people? Do you think people have dealt with it any differently this year in 23?
I think that's a Rob one.
I think it'll always be a challenge, Paul, and there'll always be arguments over what did that partner do. One thing we learned, though, is we tied compensation too much to attribution this year, and that creates some FUD, some mistrust, because sometimes people think that someone is attributing a partner to a deal just so they get paid on it. And I'm not talking about partner origination. We were looking at everything. Influence, service delivery, whatever, technology integrations and their impact on the deal. So we're taking that out of the comp plan. So there's not that element of mistrust, but we still want to track it very effectively. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to put it into part of our sales motion. So the sales cycle, educating the sellers, okay, here are the different moments in the sale when you could be introducing partners of different types and engaging partners of different types. And we'd like you to record that in our system so that we can track the attribution, track the influence, and do a better job of knowing which partners are really helping us? Who do we need to provide more enablement to? Who should we embrace more in our go-to-market and marketing campaigns? All of that. So attribution is super important. I do think it's getting better. I think we're all getting better at attributing partners of different types in the deal. We'll never perfect it.
So why don't we have a review of the predictions we made last year and see where we landed with those. So Vince, your predictions were the development of community and learning from each other. We're going to see more of that. Bringing it all together, a more robust set of tools and approaches to effectively drive a partner-led business. And last but not least, you'd said that there are some analytic tools, such as the Microsoft's Power Platform, offering numerous low-code and no-code options to access data. So how did you do with your predictions in 2023?
Do you even remember making those, Vince?
I don't either.
We had to go and listen to the transcript in order to pull those
out. Great job driving that. So, well, on the community side, I think we're getting more effective there for sure. Pat on the back to myself on helping to drive the Microsoft ecosystem in a bigger way this year and pull together people that hadn't been pulled together in person. And we're going to continue to do that. It's probably going to be my prediction for 2024 as well. I don't remember on the Power Platform side. I know certainly, I think it got overshadowed by AI in a big way. And it's certainly the underlying technology, but now it's just made it so much easier to enable Power Platform apps and the like through Copilot and so on. And what was the third one, Paul?
That was that there would be some analytics tools, such as the Power Platform, offering low and no code offerings. And you said going forward in 2023, your prediction was an increased trend of utilizing these tools for building those data analysis solutions.
Yeah, I think that what we did see on the co-selling side is analytics being applied to the co-selling methodology in a bigger way by all the vendors involved. So that's what I'll say it applied to, for sure. I think we hit a couple of them. I think we at least hit two out of three.
Two out of three ain't bad. Rob, you only had two predictions. One, definitely an increase in marketplace business, an increase in the ecosystem and the trifecta approach. You also said the future of distribution would be much more of a services hub than a sales hub.
Yeah. Well, from a BeyondTrust perspective, that definitely came true on both fronts. We saw, now we had just launched Marketplace, but we're seeing a continued growth in our Marketplace sales, absolute continued growth in the ecosystem and what we're doing. Almost 100% of any partner marketing activity we do is a trifecta. That means at least three partners, many times more than that. That is definitely true. On the second front, what was the second one? Was
the future of distribution being more of a services hub than a sales hub.
Yeah, this is something that we're working really hard on with our distributors, and they all haven't all gotten there. But we have distributors now that are that service hub. So they are providing services on behalf of partners. So if a partner doesn't have the bench, they'll go in and deliver on behalf of the partner. Or if the partner needs bench extension, they do that. We've also enabled our distributors this year to do what we call lab assessments for technical certifications. So this is kind of manually intensive. We don't have enough people to serve all of our partners. So we've been empowering our top service delivery partners and our distributors to actually go out and do those certifications themselves. That one is definitely coming true, and we're going to keep pushing on that front and expanding on it next year.
All right. How about some predictions for major predictions anyway for 2024? Let's start with you, Vince.
Well, we're going to go back to marketplaces again, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to steal a prediction from Tackle and Canalys. Canalys said last year, $45 billion by the end of 2025. Jay McBain said at one of my events that they undercalled it, that it was closer to 50. And Tackle.io came out in their latest study and said $100 billion in transactions by the end of 2026. And I think we're on track. CrowdStrike has already gotten to $1 billion this past year. So we're starting to see that. So I'm still very bullish on marketplaces and the expansion of marketplaces. I'm going to be continually speaking about this topic. I had Anthony Joseph from Microsoft at my event talking about Microsoft's investments here. Pulling together, I mentioned with you, a panel discussion at a future event where we're going to have all three hyperscalers, hopefully on stage together, discussing this. And they're all investing heavily here. And it makes a lot of sense from a business perspective. It makes a lot of sense from a co-selling perspective for other organizations to come on board. And I think we're still in the early days on that one. So that's prediction number one. I'd say prediction number two, again, is mid-market. Watch the mid-market. I think it's a golden opportunity. If I was in Rob's shoes, I'd be investing, and probably already is investing there. Hmm. I'd be doubling down my mid-market businesses coming here.
All right. How about you, Rob? Any predictions for 2024?
Yeah, absolutely, Paul. I've got a couple. So one, I was talking about partner success and customer success. So this is a big one that I hope comes true. I'm going to push it to come true at Beyond Trust. But customer success is very well known. You've got customer success teams, customer success platforms really started gaining steam over the last decade or so. I believe in 24, partner success is going to start joining the ranks of customer success. And I want to see a lot more partner success teams. I want to see partner success teams integrated into the customer success teams. I want customer success metrics to be integrating partner success metrics. I'd love to see the platform start doing a better job of integrating that. So that's my prediction in 24. Maybe we won't get all the way there, but I think you're going to be seeing a lot more, hearing a lot more talk about partner success and the necessity of partner success.
How do you define the division of labor and partner success versus partner management or partner development?
Well, at Beyond Trust, there is a division of labor. Our partner managers have one function, really, you know, building out the business plan and making sure they can execute against it. Our partner success managers are very laser focused on the technical success of the partner, going out there and making sure that what they do, what they're capable of doing, drives customer success.
Okay.
So that's the connection. Yeah. We're enabling the partner to drive ultimately customer success.
I love it. I love it. And then they're meeting at the customer versus just meeting back at the platform.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So that's number one. Number two is around metrics. You were asking about KPIs, Paul. And I predict in 24, we are going to expand much more into those ecosystem metrics. And for SaaS companies, leveraging the SaaS metrics to demonstrate the value of the ecosystem and showing a comparison of the SaaS growth with the ecosystem versus trying to run without it. So I think that's another big area.
Very good. And we will revisit those in a year's time. I know that at Magentrix, one of the things that we've noticed is a focus, and not just from vendors, but also from other players in the partnership space, on the partnership experience. And I think this also goes into the customer partner success motion that you talk about. And there's really been widespread conversation on how you accomplish this, just so your program, your PRM really meets the individual needs of each partner, even seeing PX-related jobs popping up on LinkedIn. And I think when I look at 24, I think this is going to be a continued trend. I think it'll kind of grow in intensity as people and vendors start trying to find ways to make themselves stand out, differentiate themselves from their competition. And I think if you have kind of that ultimate optimal partner success, partner experience, I think we're going to see more of a trend in with a focus area on partner experience. And also, I think we're going to start seeing a focus more on partner engagement. I think in early stage partner programs or people just trying to establish programs, historically, they haven't been very selective. But I think, and I actually, this is a call from earlier today, I think that CAMs and partner managers are going to start realizing that they have members in their ecosystem that they never should have entered a partnership agreement in the first place, as well as partners that are kind of bad fit and they're part of the root cause on why they're having issues with partner engagement, and that they simply don't have all of the resources necessary to support partners that are not a good fit when they should be focusing on partners that have a good fit. So I think we're going to see in 2024 this focus on quality over quantity. I mean, it's been a discussion for a long time, but I think we're going to see it increase because with fewer partners and a greater focus on enabling and engaging those partners, it gives you a better partner experience, and that's going to help you with your engagement and the partner success that you talk about. There was one thing that we didn't talk about as far as our predictions here. I see generative AI as a channel opportunity in 2024. And I think it means that, you know, platforms like Magentrix, we've already done some basic integration. I think that people have really seen some value from, but I think there's going to be more AI-driven services, even more AI-centric partnerships, and we're going to have to provide better analytics on those types of partner performance. But with that, and we saw this just a few weeks ago in the EU, I think we're going to see regulatory scrutiny when it comes to AI usage. We're already seeing this in Canada, where if you are using AI in your job hiring process, you actually need to include that with your advertisement for the position. So I think that we're going to start seeing compliance tracking for AI, audit logging, just to make sure that it meets regulatory standards.
You know, I think you're spot on, Paul, on both fronts. AI, I think AI will contribute to the growth of the ecosystem next year by all of the tech stack incorporating into their technologies like you're doing at Magentrix. But I also think you're spot on with the partner experience. That is so hugely important. We did our kickoff in Orlando last year, and we had Disney come in, and they were talking about their approach to customer experience, right? And how they investigate and explore every single touch point with a customer. Mm-hmm. And the PRM is a touch point, right? So that is a major area for engagement, but you want it to be a good experience. And when they're working with a partner manager or a rep or whatever, those are touch points. And so you want to measure those touch points and how good of an experience is it? So we implemented this year a quarterly survey where we're doing an NPS score quarterly to keep a pulse on things. And then each quarter asking one or two questions about those touch points. So we migrated from the annual big monster survey, and it's been so much more helpful in improving the partner experience.
And we actually just completed an integration or a product module in Magentrix that actually has surveys. And those surveys include NPS scores, they include sentiment tracking, so people can get a better handle on how their ecosystem feels, not only during the onboarding process, but through the education and training process. So they can really have actionable insights on how they're doing with that partner experience and the partner success actions.
That's great. Hey, I've got one more for you guys. So I'm predicting the demise of the channel manager.
Ooh, that won't be a popular prediction.
My title changes on January 1st. The titles of all of our channel managers change on January 1st. And I'm now going to be head of partner ecosystems. And all our channel managers are partner managers now. So it's just a little word game, but it actually has a big meaning to it.
Yeah.
Vince, on our last discussion, you were wondering when Rob was going to change his title.
I was. Glad to see it happen. Well, we're seeing the rise of the chief partner officer as well.
Yeah.
And so that's, we did a session at our event around that.
And yeah. That's a really interesting one, Vince.
Yeah. And I do, you know, my objective as well, and I think we all share this sentiment, is that we're represented in the right way at the C-suite, whether that's a chief reporting structure, but we're integrated into the business, right? We're not the separate siloed thing. I think, Rob, you're doing some great work. I think you're going to be a case study for the industry here. I love listening and watching what you're doing.
So. Yeah, but the C-suite move, I think, Vince, that is a representation of companies recognizing that partnering is not a department. Not a function. It's a business strategy.
That's right.
And growth as a business requires partnering. And that justifies bringing it up to a C-suite level where you have to speak at very high levels of the impact of partnering and how to leverage the ecosystem across every department in the company.
And people say it belongs under the CRO. I mean, we've had these debates on LinkedIn yep. and other places of forums, but people say it belongs under the CRO. But to your point, it needs to be represented in such a way that the representation goes across all the other departments, right? Mm-hmm. And if the CRO is only concerned about that pocket of sales revenue, what about the chief marketing officer? And are we aligned in the right way with finance to get the resources and integration we need and mm-hmm. the compensation plans that we need to drive the right behavior?
Yeah.
So it has to be across. And the promulgation of it, it needs to be like an infusion and injection in every department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Rob, any final thoughts or advice for our partnership professionals as they head into 2024?
Just lean into all this. There's just a moment of great change. Just embrace change, right? Because this is really, really good change for all of us that grew up in the channel as the redheaded stepchilds in companies, right? Now's a chance to really make a difference and be heard and seen throughout and across the organization. So really embrace that change, no matter what role you're in, I think, in your organization, from partner manager up to senior most levels. There's just so much more that value that you can provide and value that your partners can provide. If you really embrace it, you learn about it, be curious, understand your partner business models and what they contribute, understand the marketplace, the hyperscalers. There's just so much opportunity.
How about you, Vince? What's the kind of one consideration that a partnership professional should be mindful of going into 24?
I'm going to lean in with Rob a little bit here. We have been living through this time of tectonic shifts, right? Mm-hmm. It's been massive over the last 5 years. I do believe that embracing change, dancing with change, understanding to apply agility and pivoting as necessary is going to be critical. And we're going to continue to see more and more change, right? We're at the beginning days of AI, and we all need to embrace it. We all need to learn it. We all need to figure out where it's going to go as much as we can predict, but our lives will continue to radically change. And I think it started in COVID, and I think we're on a journey now that we all need to embrace it. Change is a constant.
Absolutely. All right, Rob and Vince, it's been great having you on the show today. Thank you so much for being our guests, and look forward to connecting with you next year.
Thanks for hosting us, Paul.
Paul, thank you so much. This has been great.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
All right, guys, thank you for listening to the Ultimate Channel Sales Podcast. Please don't forget to join us next time. For more information, please visit channelsalespodcast.com. If you haven't already, please like and subscribe to our podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode today, please leave us a 5-star rating. From the Apple Podcast app, just select our show, scroll down to the rating and review section, and click write review. And don't forget to share with your friends or professional network, anyone who'd enjoy it. See you next time on the Ultimate Channel Sales Podcast. This production is brought to you by Magentrix. Magentrix is a pioneer in platforms for partner ecosystem management and partner relationship management.